Welcome to Voyage Daily Tech, the most important news personalized for you every day, supported by Voyage.com.
After listening to today's news, you'll know, first, the AI boom's $7 trillion financing scheme mirrors the 2008 crisis, raising alarms in Washington over a potential systemic collapse. We'll explore how this off-the-books financing and GPU debt treadmill could trigger a broader financial crisis. Second, tech firms are data poisoning AI with self-serving content, creating a new generative engine optimization industry to game the system. In this episode, we'll break down this new marketing playbook and what it signals for the future reliability of AI information ecosystems. Third, AI-powered digital twins are tackling retail's $850 billion returns problem, driven by advances in NVIDIA's GPU technology. A lawyer who worked on the 2008 housing crash says he's getting deja vu from the AI boom. He says we're talking about trillions of dollars and going back to the same cycle with almost no transparency about the financing structures. A while back, we called this stampede of money the great capital reallocation, trillions shifting from headcount to compute. And today we're zooming in on the financing plumbing that makes it possible. So the thing is, the financing for these massive AI projects is being bundled into complex off-the-books deals using things like special purpose vehicles and asset-backed securities. If that sounds like a mouthful, just know this. It's the exact same playbook that led to the 2008 crisis with mortgage-backed securities. We're seeing major tech firms and private equity all tangled up in these deals, creating a web of risk that could unravel very quickly if the AI gold rush slows down. The scale is astronomical. A while back, we tallied the $635 billion the Big Four plan to spend in 2026. The latest development is that the curve steepens to an estimated $7 trillion by 2030. And Washington is noticing global spending on AI data centers is projected to hit an incredible $7 trillion by 2030. One expert calls it the largest peacetime investment project in human history, and it's being financed largely off the books. Four US senators have already called for an investigation, warning these massive, opaque debt loads could cause destabilizing losses for financial institutions and trigger a broader financial crisis. And this potential crisis might be closer to home than you think. Actually, pension funds, the money set aside for millions of people's retirements, are increasingly investing in this exact type of private credit to chase higher returns. One recent analysis estimated that up to a third of these private credit portfolios are now exposed to high risk from AI disruption. As we discussed in our AI GDP paradox episode, where most companies still report little to no measurable productivity gains, that mismatch matters when these contracts and cash flow projections get stress tested. This means the hidden gamble on AI infrastructure could already be sitting in your retirement account without you even knowing it. And at the heart of the risk is a concept called the GPU debt treadmill. The problem is simple. The ultra-powerful GPUs that run AI have a lifespan of about 7 years, but the data centers they are housed in, which are being financed with long-term loans, have lifespans of decades. This creates a massive mismatch in asset valuation. As new, more powerful chips are released, companies are pressured to take on more debt to upgrade, running on a treadmill just to stay current. We previously analyzed how tightening export controls and rising energy costs were already inflating compute and power budgets. That only accelerates this treadmill. The money flowing in is staggering. A consortium, including NVIDIA, Microsoft, and BlackRock, was part of a single $40 billion deal. And one company, CoreWeave, just secured $8.5 billion in financing by using the GPUs themselves as collateral. Remember, we noted NVIDIA's own trillion through 2028 ambition deals. Like, these are exactly how that pipeline gets built. Now, get this. Lending billions against an asset that depreciates so fast sounds like a terrible idea, but the detail that makes it work is that the loan isn't just backed by the GPUs. It's also secured by long-term multi-billion dollar contracts with customers who promise to use that computing power. This provides a predictable cash flow, which is why credit agencies actually gave this deal an investment grade rating. It's a landmark move showing how finance is bending to make these deals happen. And because so much value is concentrating at the very top, those counterparties are often the strongest credits in the market, which helps explain that rating. For insurers, trying to put a price on the risk of a $20 billion campus is becoming a weekly conversation. We previously warned about grid stress in places like Virginia and the very real risk of blackouts. That uncertainty is now being priced in line by line. So what are they doing about it? They're getting creative. Insurers are now designing brand new bespoke policies just for these mega projects, with some firms like Aon and FM Global raising their coverage limits into the billions. They're even experimenting with something called parametric insurance, which is a fascinating idea. It's a policy that pays out automatically if a specific event happens, like a major cloud service going down, providing instant cash to weather the storm. It's the kind of clean trigger we talked about around potential grid disruptions, exactly the sort of shock these campuses can't afford. This has created a core tension in the entire financial system. Lenders want asset lives that exceed their loan terms, but the short life of GPUs directly challenges that assumption. In response to this unprecedented risk, lenders are now structuring loans more cautiously, trying to protect themselves in this new high-stakes game. In other words, the great capital reallocation is now colliding with a great repricing of risk, and today's stress test is squarely on insurers and lenders. We just talked about the massive financial risks building up behind the AI boom. Now, let's shift to a different kind of risk, the one polluting the information that fuels these AIs in the first place. A company just published a comprehensive breakdown of the best products in its industry. Their number one pick, themselves, and they are not alone. This is the new playbook in the AI gold rush. Companies like Zendesk, Freshworks, and Help Scout are all publishing best of lists that conveniently rank their own products as number one. They're structured so clearly that AI search tools are eating them up and spitting them out as legitimate recommendations. This isn't just about a few sneaky marketing articles. Interestingly enough, experts are calling this a data poisoning feedback loop. As these AI models are trained on more and more of this biased, self-serving content, the AI itself becomes less reliable. It's like feeding a genius a diet of nothing but junk food. Eventually, their thinking gets foggy. The risk is that the entire information ecosystem we rely on gets degraded for everyone, and the rabbit hole goes deeper. A BBC reporter successfully got AI to falsely claim he was the tech journalist hot dog eating champion just by publishing it on his own website. Microsoft has even identified a tactic it calls recommendation poisoning, where businesses hide prompts in websites to trick AI into remembering their brand as an authoritative source for the future. It works through a method that's both clever and a little scary, a form of what cybersecurity experts call prompt injection. Marketers are embedding hidden invisible instructions in their website's code. You don't see it, but the AI does. These instructions can tell the AI to associate a brand with positive terms or even to recommend it over competitors. It blurs the line between marketing and a full-blown cybersecurity attack, and companies like Google and OpenAI are now in an arms race to build defenses against it. This is all happening because a wave of panic is sweeping the internet. One viral report claimed that top tech publications have lost 58% of their Google traffic since the start of the year, with some seeing traffic plummet by over 90%. As one marketing agency bluntly puts it on their website, "You rank number one on Google, AI does not care." This has ignited a frenzy. SEO firms are rebranding as Geo's generative engine optimizers, promising they can get you cited by ChatGPT in 60 days. One firm just raised $9 million to deploy AI agents that operate like a world-class marketer. What this all points to is a whole new industry being born right before our eyes. These geo companies are creating a new AI mention economy. They're offering services like an AI readiness audit for a few thousand dollars just to make sure your company's data is machine readable. Some are charging up to $10,000 a month on retainers, promising to track metrics like mention frequency and share of voice inside AI chats. The question is this a sustainable new marketing channel or just a bubble built on hype? But some experts are sounding the alarm, with one calling the current situation executive mania and warning that many people are overinvesting. While the hype is real, the actual user activity on AI search is still dwarfed by traditional search engines. The true battleground, however, may be trust. And this isn't a future problem, it's happening right now. Believe it or not, the trust is already breaking. One recent study found that a staggering 58% of shoppers say they lose trust in a brand after getting a single faulty AI suggestion. What's even crazier is that research also shows people are more likely to believe an AI-generated summary, even when it's full of made-up facts. This creates a dangerous combination where we are both highly skeptical and highly suggestible at the same time. Users have been developing personal connections with chatbots, using them for everything from career coaching to relationship advice. Now, that intimate space is the new frontier for marketers. As one executive noted, brands have a new duty of care because while this is an enormous opportunity, the reality of this manipulation can be disorienting for users who thought their conversations were private. Speaking of AI's impact on business, it's not all manipulation and data poisoning. In the retail world, AI is being deployed to solve a massive, nearly $850 billion problem. That's the estimated cost of product returns in the US for 2025, a problem that eats directly into a company's profits. For online sales, nearly one in five items is sent back. The trend is being driven by Gen Z, with shoppers aged 18 to 30 averaging almost 8 online returns per person last year. For many retailers, the cost to process these returns is now higher than the value of the refund itself. You know, that cost isn't just shipping. It's the labor to receive the item, inspect it, repackage it, restock it, and in many cases, mark it down or even discard it. It's a logistical nightmare. But a new crop of AI startups is fighting back with a futuristic solution. Forget basic sizing charts. Companies like Catches, backed by LVMH's Antoine Arnault, are creating digital twins of shoppers with what they call mirror-like realism. This isn't just a static image. The technology incorporates the physics of fabric and how material interacts with a moving body, all built on NVIDIA's platform. For years, this kind of real-time physics simulation was way too expensive for most companies, but this is where the situation takes a more complex turn. Recent advances in GPU technology, specifically from NVIDIA, have made the raw computing power what experts call bare metal in the cloud so much cheaper and faster. We're talking acceleration of up to 50 times. This is the key that unlocks the economics and makes this technology financially viable for retailers right now. But creating a digital twin raises some serious questions. First, your data. To make this work, you have to upload photos and measurements that's sensitive biometric data. And unlike a password, you can't change your biometrics if they're stolen. While some companies have clear privacy policies, the industry lacks a universal standard, creating real risks of data breaches. And there's another more personal concern. Could this mirror-like realism become a dysmorphic mirror? We've already seen a phenomenon called Snapchat dysmorphia, where people seek cosmetic surgery to look like they're filtered selfies. There's a real worry that ultra-realistic virtual try-ons could create new forms of digital body dissatisfaction if not handled with incredible care. And if you think this is a niche experiment, think again. The retail giants are all in. Zara has rolled out its own virtual try-on tool. ASOS has seen a stark improvement in profitability, partly driven by a reduction in its returns rate after experimenting with virtual try-ons. Shopify, Amazon, and Google have all launched their own versions of the technology. What we're seeing here is a fascinating split in strategy. We're seeing giants like Google building this technology directly into search, offering a good enough version for everyone, while at the same time, specialized companies like Catches are targeting the high-end luxury market, which demands that super high fidelity, perfect experience. The future probably isn't one or the other, but both existing at the same time. The potential payoff is massive. Catches projects its app can drive a 10% increase in conversions and a 20 to 30 times return on investment for its brand partners. However, if you zoom out, you'll see another layer to this. While returns are a silent killer for profits, they are also a rich source of feedback. Think about it. Comments like the fabric was itchy or the fit was weird in the shoulders are pure gold for designers. If virtual try-ons successfully reduce returns, how will brands get that crucial post-purchase data back? It's a feedback loop they can't afford to lose. But here's the reality check from Guggenheim. Senior Managing Director Simeon Siegel, he cautions that AI is not a magic wand and that beyond fit, retailers are looking to AI for inventory management and customer targeting. As he puts it, what you sell is always going to be more important than how you sell. And so I just think remembering that will help dictate who wins and benefits and amplifies from AI versus who gets consumed by it. We've been talking about how AI is reshaping, you know, industries like retail, but the financial world that underpins it all is facing its own internal battle. And it just got very public. The CEO of the world's largest bank just called a core part of US financial policy un-American. In his massive annual letter, JP Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon didn't just give an update. He dropped a bombshell. He's taking direct aim at US regulators over new banking rules. The rules Dimon is targeting are part of a massive international agreement known as the Basel III Endgame. The goal is to make sure big banks can withstand another major financial crisis. But Diamond is arguing that the American version of these rules goes too far, putting US banks at a global disadvantage. Here's the jaw-dropping number at the center of it. Diamond says the new proposals would force his bank to hold as much as 50% more capital for the exact same loans compared to a smaller competitor. His verdict on the rules, he calls some aspects, frankly, nonsensical. What really brought this to a head was the specific impact on certain activities. The proposed rules could increase the capital required for a bank's trading activities by nearly 60%. Critics, including Diamond, argue that European banks already face similar rules, but the US is implementing them in a much stricter way, creating what they see as an unlevel playing field that could harm American competitiveness. But that's not the whole picture. Diamond claims that the web of regulations put in place after the 2008 crisis has now gone too far. He describes a fragmented, slow-moving system with excessive rules that he says have actually made the financial system weaker and reduced productive lending. He is making this defiant stand while also navigating what he calls the biggest risks on the planet. He put geopolitical tensions, including the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, at the very top of his list, calling war the realm of uncertainty. This isn't just a CEO commenting on the news. It reflects a major strategic shift. The leader of America's largest bank now sounds like a statesman because global political events are now seen as direct financial risks. It's a sign that in our interconnected world, you can't separate finance from foreign policy. He also addressed the revolutionary impact of artificial intelligence, a force he says is unlike any technology that came before it. While he warns of its unknown societal effects, he's not shying away. This is crucial because experts are warning about what they call third-order effects. Beyond job losses, there are deeper systemic risks. Imagine thousands of AI trading bots all learning from the same data and making the same decision at the same time. This could create massive synchronized sell-offs and market bubbles that are nearly impossible for humans to predict or control. SEC Chair Gary Gensler has even warned that AI could be at the center of the next financial crisis. JP Morgan is already in a full sprint to deploy AI at every level of its business. And this isn't just talk. The bank is investing nearly $20 billion a year in technology. But the really fascinating part is that instead of mass layoffs, they've started a huge redeployment plan. Over the last year, while the bank's total headcount stayed about the same, the number of operations and support staff actually fell, while client-facing roles grew by 4%. They're retraining and moving people into new jobs created by AI, a potential model for how other companies might handle this technological wave. In a sweeping letter, the leader of JP Morgan Chase isn't just outlining global chaos. He's declaring a battle on home soil, arguing the very rules designed to protect the system are now the biggest threat to it. Speaking of global risks and shifting alliances, the new frontier for that isn't on Earth, but in deep space. Astronauts are about to fly farther from Earth than any human in history, but that's not even the most stunning part of the story. For the first time in over half a century, a crew is at the moon, picking up where the Apollo program left off. But this is not a nostalgia trip. What's most significant here is that this isn't just America's mission. The crew includes Canadian astronaut Jeremy Hansen, along with NASA astronauts Reid Wiseman, Victor Glover, and Christina Koch, signaling a fundamental shift from the old Cold War space race. This is now about alliances. The United States has built a coalition of over 60 nations under what's called the Artemis Accords, all agreeing to principles for peaceful and transparent exploration. On the other side, you have China and Russia building their own separate lunar station. We are literally watching two blocks form for the future of the moon. The Artemis II mission is designed to see the moon in a way no one ever has. While the legendary Apollo flights orbited just 70 miles above the surface, the Artemis II crew will fly by at a distance of approximately 4,000 to 6,000 miles. That massive difference in altitude is the key. Now, this high-altitude gamble isn't just for a better view. Here's where it gets interesting. NASA is deliberately pushing the Orion spacecraft to its limits in the harsh environment of deep space. This trajectory is designed to uniquely stress critical systems that you can't test near Earth. We're talking about deep space navigation and, most importantly, the heat shield. When this crew returns, they will be screaming into the atmosphere at over 25,000 miles per hour, a much higher velocity than returning from low Earth orbit. This mission is the only way to prove the heat shield can handle that extreme re-entry and keep the crew safe on future missions. It allows them to see the entire spherical surface of the moon at once, including views near both poles that were impossible for their predecessors. In fact, they have already captured the first ever image of the moon's Grand Canyon, the Oriental Basin, as seen completely by human eyes. And this is where the human element becomes so critical. In an age of incredible robotic probes, you might ask, why send people? After all, a trained astronaut can see and interpret things in real time that a robot would miss. They can spot subtle variations in color and texture, identify unexpected geological features, or even witness transient phenomena like a flash from a meteorite impact. It's the difference between a static photo and having an expert geologist on site, able to adapt and investigate in the moment. But the journey gets even more intense. As the Orion spacecraft passes behind the moon, the crew will enter a planned communications blackout lasting approximately 40 minutes. For 40 minutes, they will be utterly alone with the entire moon blocking all radio signals to Earth. They will be on the far side seeing views that were too dark or difficult for the 24 Apollo astronauts who came before them. As NASA's lead scientist for the mission admits, we don't always know exactly what they're going to see. This high-stakes flyby is not just for the record books. NASA's chief confirms this is the first time astronauts have ever flown on the Orion spacecraft, and the data they collect on its life support systems and performance during this journey is considered paramount. The data is paramount because we are bridging a 50-year knowledge gap. For half a century, no human has traveled outside Earth's protective magnetic field. We have so many critical unknowns about human survival in deep space. This mission is designed to answer them. They'll be collecting data on how deep space radiation affects the human immune system, monitoring the crew's psychological health and sleep patterns, and, of course, testing the absolute reliability of the life support systems. This isn't just a test for NASA. It's a high-stakes validation for commercial partners like Lockheed Martin, who built the Orion capsule. The success of this public-private model for building spacecraft is riding on this flight. That information is the critical foundation for setting up the subsequent Artemis 3 and Artemis 4 missions, which aim to finally return humans to the lunar surface.
That's it for today on Voyage Daily Tech. Follow, share, and stay tuned for daily updates coming your way tomorrow.